Lovely Jay Geiger. Big news. Gary Larson is back. Far Side is back. He's coming out of retirement.
Well, that's what we're seeing an awful lot on social media right now, right?
That's the big announcements we're seeing on social media.
Yeah, we're seeing, and it's not necessarily coming from thefarside.com or Andrews McMeel. Really, it's a lot of very excited fans like us saying, "Oh, he's back! He's back! He's back!" So let's take a little step back just for a second. He put out three cartoons.
Brad, it's a full book. It's a full book.
Well, if you put the copyright notice on the front of page one, and then you've got the back of page one, the front and back of page two, you're done. You've got a book.
Brad, that's an ash can. Don't take this from me. That's a book.
Oh, my gosh. Well, listen, so here's the deal. I was excited, too. But it's kind of easy to let your nostalgia run wild with you. Once I took a look at those a second time, it's like, one of those was really good. The other two, I wasn't as crazy about for my personal taste, right? It's exciting to see that he's experimenting with digital drawing techniques. Yep. That's very exciting, and it's great to see him taking to that and being experimental and everything. But as far as he's back and he's out of retirement, I'm kind of hoping for that too. But I need to see a whole lot more than three comics updated. And again, as he said in his in the post that went along with that, he said the same thing that we said when we started talking about this way back when. He's really gotten accustomed to not having a daily deadline or any kind of a deadline.
I've really grown accustomed, Brad, to getting about $10 million in calendar sales a year with not having to do any more work. I've grown accustomed to that.
Yeah.
So, it is sweet and endearing and speaks to people's fandom and nostalgia that they're like, oh, he's back, he's coming, he's going, he's more, it's all happening, it's all happening.
Yeah.
And it's three cartoons. And to your point, it's three cartoons that are like, one is good. All right, that one is good.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the initial excitement that everybody had when, like, Burke Breathitt brought Bloom County back to Facebook.
Yeah.
I was an incredible Bloom County fan, like being a Far Side fan.
Yes.
Was incredibly excited. And then it was kind of like, all right, well, look at that. There's a Bloom County on Facebook, huh?
I've got so many questions about that, and partially I'm a little bit angry because for some reason their entire push seems to be Facebook, which I don't know whether I agree with that. Although I think maybe I'd have to check. They might have gotten out to Twitter and so forth.
You're talking about Bloom County now.
Bloom County.
Yeah.
But the way it's updated on Facebook, for example, again, like I've talked about on this show, they put it out as a horizontal strip where really they got to be taking that thing and making it into a square so it's easily read on mobile devices and as a swipe through on Instagram and so forth. Whoever's making those decisions about how Bloom County is going out on social media, I'd really like to know if I'm missing something. Like there might be a deeper strategy that I'm just not familiar with.
Well, I will say this. He is producing books, right? And so maybe that is the strategy, to be fair. He's like, no, I'm producing a book and I just happen to be sharing it on Facebook in the meantime.
Right.
But it's of a different moment to go, it's a Facebook exclusive. Like, between you, me, and the wall, I feel like we've reached peak Facebook. And especially if you're going to try to reach anybody younger, they're like, nah, my mom and my aunts are on Facebook. I don't want to be on Facebook, you know?
Right.
It's an odd choice made by what I feel like is an older group of consultants or cartoonists going, Facebook's great. That's all we need.
Yeah.
Let's just do Facebook.
Yeah.
And anyway, what's funny about both, not funny, but it's just an interesting thing to note as we go into the second half probably of our career is how sometimes you can't go home again in terms of Far Side and Bloom County. You know what I mean? Like my nostalgia of reading Watterson, Larson, and Breathitt as a kid is through the roof. It's like imagination of how I watched Return of the Jedi or, The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
And then now I'm watching, you know, the last Skywalker there. What is it? The Last Jedi. My God, I already forgot the title.
Last Skywalker.
And I could care less. I don't know that I'll ever watch that movie again. It's just like, what a terrible storyline that was. And a part of me is like, these comics that are coming back, it is hard to go home again. It's hard to recapture that magic. It was of a moment. It was of a moment in their life and of their art style and of their creativity and output. Mm-hmm. And it was of a moment in culture. And so as we start the show, Brad, what do you think? What are your thoughts on that? Can you go home again?
No, I don't. I really don't think you can. And I really feel bad about that because I was a rabid Bloom County fan. And part of it is that we've all changed, too. The society has changed, right? So much of Bloom County was politics.
Yeah.
And at least for a certain portion of us, it was a little bit more comfortable to laugh at politics than it is today.
Yeah,
right?
today is literally life and death. It was more like, oh, Reagan made a boo-boo, you know, that kind
of
thing.
Right. But that's why, but for us as two old white guys, you know, we were, that was something that we were comfortable with. If you were walking a different walk in the 80s and Reagan was saying some of this stuff, you definitely weren't laughing.
No,
right?
That is very true. Like if you were experiencing the AIDS crisis up close, you're like, oh, this is not funny, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Right. But from my personal perspective, I thought Bloom County was great fun, and the politics were something that were able to be laughed at. Today, the quickest way to get me to click away from something is to put politics in it, right? And any number of political images or caricatured faces, I run screaming from that because I know what's going on. I know it's bad, and I don't care to laugh about it.
Right.
You know, and that's very different from where I was in the 1980s. So so then when those topics and those kind of things permeate Bloom County today, I'm not as interested in reading them. And the other thing is, because I kind of fell away very quickly, I don't even see them in my Facebook feed anymore. Like, I don't know the last time that I saw Bloom County.
So I don't know if famously is the right word, but I completely stepped away from Facebook. I don't give two shits about Facebook anymore. And I don't go on there. I don't look at it. In fact, anytime an article links to something that is embedded in Facebook, I don't get to see it because I don't even log in anymore.
Yeah.
But what I want to get at in that point is that I, outside of Facebook, living outside of Facebook, no one ever shares or says, oh, you got to go see this Bloom County.
Right.
And so that is kind of all you need to know, that like maybe it's not catching fire, you know?
Which is too bad, because again, it's one of my all-time favorites.
But I will say this as we go to start the show. If anybody can think of a comic that did go back to Oz, so to speak, did recapture the magic, let us know, because I'd like to think of one that like went on hiatus for 10, 20 years, or the artist left it alone and then came back to it, and we're all like, whoa, this is great! What an amazing like comeback for this!
Right.
And I'm trying to think, maybe there's... No, I can't. I can't think of another one that caught the magic again.
And I'm going to stop you before you hit the send button on that email. It's got to be something a little bit more significant than Bill Watterson doing a guest strip for, what was it, Pearls Before Swine or something?
Right, right, right.
You know, it's got to be something a little bit more significant than, you know, a guest. It's got to be come back and really seriously start publishing again, months and months and months of new content and actually build up another body of work.
And also capture that magic again. Yeah.
And return to Oz.
Right.
At the same time.
And I mean, I know the other one that just happens to pop into my mind is when DC tried to recapture the magic with Watchmen, with Before Watchmen. Remember that one?
Yeah.
Boy, was that a weird series. I got to say, though, the Watchmen TV show, boy, was that good. That was amazing. That was as good, if not better, than the Watchmen. I found it amazing. I really enjoyed that. But it's, I guess what we're asking here is if you can think of a cartoonist or a title that came back from the wilderness of being on hiatus or having ended, for a more than a few years and was as good or better, I'd like to hear about it because I genuinely can't think of one at this moment. And anyway, on that note, I'm going to say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics.
And making a living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, editor of webcomics.com and creator of Evil Inc.
And I'm Dave Kellett. I tried to do it. It didn't work. And I'm his friend Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon. Me just wanting to be Brad. That's what that was.
You need more gray in your mustache if you're going to do that.
And I'm his friend Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave. Let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics, my friend, and let's dive right into it. We're going to jump right in with something that I thought would be fun to talk about, Brad.
Yeah.
Because a couple of folks have been asking about how to start a story, how to get going on a story. How do you get the momentum going on the story? Yeah. And in conversation, you the other day had brought up a very interesting idea that I had never heard of prior, and yet it's been floating around for a few years. It's called the 8-page rule.
Yeah.
Brad, could you take everybody through the 8-page rule for comics or starting a comic story?
So this goes all the way back to the days of Zuda Comics. And that was
Zuda. Real quick, give everybody Zuda a quick history lesson because it's good to know what to look out for in this world.
Well, you know what? My memory is a little hazy. I know that was it a contest-based type of thing?
It was
somebody that wanted to publish webcomics.
It was one of those, hey, dance like a monkey, and if you do great, we'll take you out of the zoo and publish you or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah, I think it was kind of contest-based, which immediately Dave and I are like, man, okay, no thanks. I'll build my own thing.
Yeah.
But there was a lot. There were some people for whom it probably was a very good thing, just because it wasn't our cup of tea. But Zuda Comics...
No, I think it was not a great thing. Let's be honest. You're trying to be generous, and I appreciate you as a friend. I'm saying this. But honestly, as to younger cartoonists or neophyte cartoonists, if there's ever a contest-based thing, give a long, hard thought to it before you do it, because usually you have to ask, it's almost a follow the money type thing. It's like, who does this truly benefit that they're getting 300 submissions and one person will get chosen?
Right.
It's not you necessarily benefiting from that. That's them going, hey, I got 300 submissions for free, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and so, if you're big business savvy is saying, well, you can't win if you don't play, that's not great thinking. You know, that's the kind of thinking that's going to lead you down a lot of the wrong pathways. So yeah, I agree. It was not a great thing for me. Go ahead.
I was going to say it's almost magical thinking is what it is for your career.
Oh, yeah.
If I do this, then the king will take the sword and touch both of my shoulders and then I'll be a knight, you know?
Yeah.
Like a career, the recognition of building a career is the recognition that it takes 5, 10, 15 years of hard, consistent work, not someone magically bonking you on the shoulder with a sword going, now you're a cartoonist.
Right.
And that's what a lot of these contests do, is they give you the illusion that if you just get in the door at the right time with just the right project, bada bing, bada boom, you're a cartoonist now, you know, that kind of thing.
So, well, and the main thing to do with these contests particularly is to be very careful about reading the terms of service, because to make sure that you're not giving away rights by entering this contest, not unheard of.
And if Zuda was not guilty of that, and I honestly don't remember if they were
a while ago.
But there have been a couple of comics contests type things in Brad and my career where we took one look at it and went, well, wait a minute, they get all film and TV rights, they get all publishing rights, they get all, well, what do I get? I get a smile. Great. All right. Well, good for me.
And it plays off of so many creative people have this need for vindication and justification.
Well, it's also, they liked me. Hooray. You know,
that's the word. That's exactly. And we need that, that in our lives sometimes. And I think part of being a successful creator is getting past that. I really do.
You're right. Okay. Well, anyway, I'm sorry, but it was a worthwhile sidetrack, but I sidetracked you because you were going to tell us about the 8-page rule.
So back in the days of Zuda, Bridget Alverson, writing for Comic Book Resources, found herself reviewing a lot of these stories, and she did a piece that really struck me. I thought it was very, very smart. She called it the 8 pages rule. And she said, if I'm reading your comic by page 8, I should know what's going on, who the main characters are, and I should have a reason to care about what's happening. In other words, you should have the basic of mechanics of the plot laid out, and you should have an emotional hook. In other words, a reason to care about these characters. If you can't do that in 8 pages, she said, you've got a real problem. Now, this was, oh, golly, this was back in 2009. I wrote about it for webcomics.com. This was in 2009. Attention spans have only gotten smaller since then. In other words, think about 2009. Social media was nowhere near what it is now. Today, your job, if you're going to build an audience, is to stop that person scrolling through social media. They've got the attention span of a ferret on a double cappuccino. You've got to really, really be amazing to
Chef's get them kiss. To... Mwah, that was great.
Thank you. You got to be good to, you've got to really call your shot. You got to plan what you're doing on social media to get somebody to pay attention. But let's say you do get them to pay attention and they do go and read that. You've got to get them in 8 pages. And if you can't, you've got a bigger problem. What do you think about that, Dave? The 8 pages rule.
Yeah, 8 pages is interesting because I have read comics where well into the first chapter, maybe to the end of the first chapter, I'm like, I still don't know what this is about. I still don't know where I'm going. I still don't know why am I reading this, which is the underlying question of like, what is the there that makes me want to go to the next page, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And 8 pages feels about right because it's, you know, if you roughly translate a page a minute, 8 minutes in is a good investment to know, you know what? This is intriguing me. I like where this is going.
Yeah.
And Brad, you had been talking before about, because it's not for me and it's definitely not for you, but you've been talking before about comics where it's that type of comic where literally nothing happens, but that's the point. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The ennui of certain lives, the boredom of certain lives where like I'll sit and look out this window. I'm stroking my cat. Oh, now the cat's walked away. Now I'm by myself looking out the window. And by the way, this is over pages of comics, you know?
Yeah.
This is kind of the Chris Ware school of comics where it's like, I'm very sad. I'm going to sit here and be sad. You know, that kind of thing. And that's okay. That appeals to a certain type of person.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not you and I, but if you in 8 pages are establishing and keeping that mood of nothing is happening, what you're telling your readers is that this story is about boredom. This story is about a life that's going nowhere. Do you know what I mean, Brad? Like that is the medium is the message in that case. And the message is boredom. So it's okay if the story that you're trying to tell is boredom or sadness or that kind of thing. Oh, go ahead. Just don't be
surprised if nobody wants to read about boredom. The reason that they picked up the comic is to avoid the boredom of their own lives.
Yeah.
And if you're peddling boredom, they got that. They came to you to alleviate that.
That's true. Now, there's a reason why bang, zoom, big blockbuster movies do well versus quiet art house films, you know? But art house films still exist for a reason because, in part, the message of an art house film is that you are not alone in feeling sad or in feeling bored or in feeling the quiet desperation of life. You know what I mean? Those quiet films where it's someone slowly sipping tea in a Parisian third-story apartment by themselves, you know, on year 29 or whatever it is. What I'm getting at is that those stories have a place. They have an audience. But it might not be a very big audience because, to Brad's point, a lot of art is escapism from the moment that someone is in their life or something new from what they're experiencing in their life, which is not the same as escapism. But I think, Brad, if in 8 pages the message that you're giving is nothing has happened, then that story is probably going to be nothing is happening to this character, you know?
Well, yeah, and we talked, this was one of my favorite parts of talking during Cocktails with Comic Lab this past weekend, was at one point we got talking about making every page significant. We were talking about how to plan out a story and how to thumbnail, and we started talking about the fact that I think every update has to be significant. And if you're doing like full pages, then certainly every page has to land. That last panel on that page has to be significant.
Well, something just popped into my mind. I've literally never phrased it this way.
Mm-hmm.
Our job as a cartoonist is to maintain curiosity for the reader.
Yes. Yes.
Don't you think?
Yes.
Because the death knell for any comic is, I don't give a shit. I literally don't care what happens to these characters. I'm out. I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
And so if you can in any way get them to go, I'm kind of curious to see what happens to this. Is this woman going to become president, or is this general going to start a war, or is this superhero going to break through this bank wall, or, you know, whatever it is that's whatever the character arc is that you're like, I'm curious to see what's going to happen. That's pretty interesting.
Right.
But if you're like, I was reading a comic the other day and I was a massive, you know, interstellar war thing going on. There was no end, though. I didn't care about anything. I didn't care about the characters. I didn't care about. And so I was like, my lack of curiosity was all I needed to know that it was time to stop that comic. It just wasn't catching fire with me, you know?
Yeah. I see this so often where you've got an entire page devoted to nothing. I just read today a page where it had to have been 8 or 9 panels. A guy walks into a room. He opens up a cupboard. He pulls out a can of beans. He goes to the coffee maker. He pours some coffee. He puts the beans on the stove. He puts the beans on the plate. He goes over to the couch. Now he's eating beans on the couch, and that was the end of the page. Now, I'm telling you, I'm not going to read any more of that comic because there's no reason. They wasted an entire page to tell me nothing. And there's got to be something. And I think those words you used, maintain curiosity. I get that if you're creating a slow moment, I get that. You're going to slow down time and you're going to give me the minutiae. But by that last panel, you got to give me a reason to turn the page, or else especially if you're building your audience on the web, you really risk losing that person. Because if you don't give them a reason to keep reading, they're going to read a page of somebody making beans and sitting on the couch, and they're going to get the heck out of there because there's no reason for them to keep up with that story. You haven't given them a reason. And it's like I said, you're out there really struggling to build an audience with a lot of interruptions and interactions. You really can't luxuriate in the making of beans and the sitting on couches. You got to make something happen with this story sooner or later.
So I want to jump back to something that the Greeks and the Romans learned a long time ago, which is the concept of in medias res. Mm-hmm. And Brad, we've talked about this before on the show, but
yeah.
One of the reasons why it's become a trope for a lot of movies is they have used their metaphorical first 8 pages to jump right into the action. So in medias res means in the middle of things.
Right.
So instead of starting from the very beginning, like, here's Brad Geiger as a little baby, we start off with Brad Geiger in a car crash where he's shooting flamethrowers out of both sides of the car and a dragon is swooping down. And then you have this tropish moment where people go, you kind of wonder how I got here. That's me.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how I got here. But the thing is, one of the reasons why that trope still works, even though we all kind of winkingly joke about it, is because you're like, well, how the hell did he get in that?
Right.
I'm curious.
Right.
I am genuinely curious how this guy, Brad Geiger, got into this situation. And so you'll see movies like Thor Ragnarok start that way. You'll see movies like that video game. Oh, my God, I forgot his name. What's the blue guy that spins around?
Come on, help me out. Oh, my goodness.
I've never felt older. I forgot his name. Oh, for goodness
sake.
All
I can think of is the Tick.
Terrible character design that they redid because the fans
Sonic
went nuts.
The Hedgehog?
Sonic the Hedgehog also starts in medias res. I'm just thinking of movies that happen. My God, I forgot about Sonic the Hedgehog. Anyway, one of the reasons why movies like that start in medias res is because your interest is piqued. You're curious.
Yeah.
And right, those first 8 pages, as Brad was talking about, have shown you this is something that's happening. This is a story that's worth listening to. Whereas if you heard a story of like, okay, now I'm having another potato chip, crunch, 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 and you're flipping the page and it's more page. Like, there's nothing worse than when you get to a comic and it's one of those boring moments and you flip the page and it's another full spread.
Oh, my God.
And you know what my mind does? I just quietly go to the bottom corner of that right page and then I flip the next page. And if it's a couple pages of that, oh, God, I'm out faster than anything.
Faster than you can think. But I will say this, be careful of in media res, because some people use in media res as a magic wand. I saw one comic just recently, gave me 3 pages of in media res, a really action scene, guns a-blazing and big shadowy, cloudy antagonists and so forth. Page 4, he's working in an insurance office, and it's giving me the minutiae of the insurance office, and he's up to page 6, and it's more of this sitting on the couch eating stuff. In other words, he gave me a great in media res opening for 3 pages, and then hit the brakes And then nothing's happening. In media res is great. Start with the action. But then that's not a magic wand that waves away all this boring stuff you got planned for me. You got to start putting plot points together after that in media res opening, or else it's no good. It's not a magic wand.
Yeah, like I think a counterpoint to that one that's a very similar story structure is probably the original Matrix, where it starts in medias res, and then doesn't Neo wake up in his boring little room and it gets a knock on a door? But the point is, the knock on the door is the next moment of crisis. Who is this? Who are these people? What is the white rabbit? Why does he have to fight? All that kind of stuff. You know, so like to Brad's point, it gets right back into, here's why we should care. Oh, more stuff is happening. Ah, right back into it. But yeah. I do like this. To put a capstone on it, Brad, I think this 8 pages rule is a good reminder, even if it's not a hard and fast rule, it's a good reminder that all of us need to start our stories in a more impactful, exciting, and curiosity-driven way, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I'm seeing another question from a Patreon backer, and I want to bring it up real quick because it dovetails with this topic really, really nicely. Listen to this, Dave. Kay Rose writes in, "My question is about panel layouts. When making comics, I always prefer simple panels and layouts without too many overlaps or panels on top of panels. But I've been given the very valid feedback that it's too few panels, and I've rethought my layout to add more panels. I was wondering if you guys agree with a 4 to 7 average panel per page rule of thumb." So Kay is saying she's been told she's not putting enough panels on these pages. The person told her the rule of thumb is 4 to 7 panels per page, and she wants to know what we think about that. Give Kay some advice, Dave.
Well, it's interesting because I have, without it being a hard and fast rule, I have come to very much appreciate the 5 to 6 panel ratio on my pages for Drive. Something about 6 is great. 5 works too if I need to have something more of a splashy panel, you know. So you have 4 kind of squarish panels and one more a splashier panel. But I think there's something to that ballpark of 4 to 7. 4 feels a little bit, when you put that 4 on a page, it feels a little bit like I'm a comic strip that's masquerading as a comic book page. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know why that is. We can talk about that, but I don't know why that is. And then if you put anything more than 7, it starts to feel like a cacophony of crazy, you know, where you're just like, what am I being asked to read here? This is I'm slipping into madness with all these panels. So I think somewhere in that, I would say 5 to 7 range is probably where you want to be for for most of your pages. And frankly, I think 5 to 6 is actually the ideal. Brad Geiger, what are your thoughts?
Wow, we're going to argue.
Oh, okay. All right, let's argue. Mommy and daddy are going to fight.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't know argue, but actually you're making me think twice about a couple things, because the average Evil Ink page is 14 panels. And that's because the average Evil Ink storyline is much more about relationships and driving the humor and stuff like that. So I'm usually breaking those into two updates of about 7 panels each. When I put those together, I've got about 14 panels per page, which I don't know if I continue down that road, maybe I've got to make the books instead of, portrait sized pages, maybe make them landscape and just instead of putting pages out, put half pages for those books. I don't know. But the typical Evil Ink is 14 panels. After Dark, that's much more about action. That's much more about images, and what's going on visually. So those tend to be 9 panels per page. But I'm going to say that instead of paying a whole lot of attention to the number of panels on your page, I would go back to that first topic that we talked about at the top of the show and say, did you make something significant happen on that page? If the answer is yes, and you did it in 2 panels, then that's a 2-panel page. If the answer is no, then you need more panels to get to the place where you made something significant happen.
I also should amend my earlier comment to mention that Drive is written in a non-standard comic book page ratio. So it is a standard DC Marvel Image Dark Horse kind of page is taller than it is wide by a significant margin, right? We all know that page ratio. Drives are squatter and frankly almost square. They're 9.5 by 9, I think, or 9.5 by 8, whatever it is. And so you end up with a very square feeling thing. So for me, 6 panels is kind of maxing out, but Brad has a taller page. DC and Marvel have a taller page. And so I think a few more panels is warranted on those page. I don't know, Brad, that 14 I don't know how to advise you there because it works fine as I read it, but they are dense pages. There's a lot of there, you know?
Yeah. I almost wonder, I mean, it's something that I would have a little bit of fun experimenting with. In other words, like I was having a hard time putting it into words, but you know, like the size and shape of a Garfield book, you know, those pages are horizontal.
Yes. No, I know those ones. Yeah. Those older
ones. Instead of putting out a full page, I could break them down into half pages very easily. And each one of those half pages would fit on a horizontal page and it would read like that.
Now, let me ask you, because this is sort of an interesting side journey here.
Yeah.
You are creating half pages that you are putting up on your website.
Right.
You put them together and they are a page.
Right.
But because they are appearing on a website, each of those half pages have a satisfying ending. They have something substantive happening, either visually, character development, plot, right? What? Here's my question to you. Why aren't those pages?
That's a good question. They're not enough for a full page. In other words, what's happening for Evil Inc. is that it's usually a punchline. In other words, what happens is that first half page at the halfway mark of the actual page is a punchline. The second half is usually a punchline, and that brings the entire page to a satisfying point in the storyline. In other words, that first half, it's much more important for me to hit a punchline. That bottom of the page itself, punchline plus significant story point. And that plot isn't necessarily going to get advanced in the first update, which is the halfway mark of the actual page, but it's much more important to do it in the second. Does that make sense?
It does. And I actually, you have clearly put thought to that because that was a very complete answer to that. So my follow-up question is, why? I guess if we're no longer in an advertising model, why do it that way?
That's a great question. But I'm not trying to put you on the spot. Other than the fact that that's how it feels right for me to tell this story, I'm not sure I've got a better answer to that.
Well, I mean, the answer of it feels right to me and it's the way I enjoy writing, that's maybe enough. So that's fair if that's the answer.
Because the end result is when you're reading one of my books, there's not only one thing happening on the page, there's a couple of, like, it's almost like a rolling build, whereas there's a punchline about the halfway mark, there's another punchline at the bottom, now you've gotten to a significant plot point, you turn the page, there's a lot of activity happening on the page, and I think that makes for kind of a crisp reading pace.
Okay, so I in a way that acknowledges that path works for you and I don't want you to change it, I would like to say this. One of the things that I and Brad have used to great effect in our cartooning career is it's almost a philosophical question, which is, if I were going to be starting this process, and it doesn't matter whatever this process is, if I were going to be starting this process now, is this the way I would be choosing to do it now? And part of that is a mindset that keeps you prepared for things that change quickly on the internet, or a truth that was true 4 years ago about the way you should do something that is now no longer true. So you say, if I was starting Drive right now, would I do it the way I'm doing it? If I was starting Evil Inc. right now, would I do it the way I'm doing it? And this is true for you listening, listening at home. That always sounds weird. But you listening wherever you're listening, is that ask yourself with your projects, if I was starting now, would I do it this way? And most of the time with Drive, I'm like, yep, this is 100% the way I would do it. With Sheldon, very often, what happened in the last 5 years or so is I said to myself, in terms of the horizontal format, no, it's not the way I would do it anymore.
Yeah.
I was doing that. A, because there was a legacy thing with newspaper comic strips, and I still kind of wanted to be a newspaper comic strip. Mm-hmm. So 20 years ago, that's why I did horizontal comic strips. And then it became, well, they're easy to put in books, and there's a lot of truth to that, so don't get me wrong. Right. They're easy to put in books. But a part of me was like, yeah, but I'm not enjoying this format in the way of telling this joke. I would like to try a big, tall comic strip. I would like to try an eight-panel comic strip. And part of that was like following my own bliss, you know? And so I was like, no, the way I would choose to do it now, if I were starting, would not be to start with comic strips. It would be to start with whatever the format worked for that day. Now, does that mean that my putting together books is going to be hellish? Absolutely. I have shot myself in the foot when it comes to that. But it kept me interested in Sheldon. It kept me making Sheldon, which was a big crisis at various points in Sheldon. You know, if you do a comic for 22 years and see how long you're doing on year 18, you know? So it worked in that regard. But I think an interesting thing maybe, Brad, to ask yourself, and it sounds like you have a satisfactory answer, is if you were starting Evil Inc. today, would you start it with those two half pages that then combine to form a page in the book? And it's the answer sounds like, yes, maybe you would, because you've enjoyed writing that process.
Well, and also part of it is if I was doing it, I might consider taking up that After Dark panel grid that I've got, where it's more of an average of 9 panels per page. And instead of making, you know, again, that half page update would become a full page, and that would allow the art a little bit more room. And there's no doubt about it that the art has become a little bit more important than it used to be in Evil Inc. And it would certainly create some problems that I don't have now. Whereas, again, so much of Evil Inc. is about the wordplay and the dialogue going back and forth. It would be really easy to kind of slip into a talking heads kind of thing, you know, but it would definitely be something to consider as I'm bringing certain chapters to a close and deciding how to launch the next book and so forth. I'm coming up to a good ending point for the current storyline, and then I'll be starting a new one. All the stuff that's out at this point would be turned into a book. So at that point, I could definitely rethink it. And I got a feeling I'm going to be doing some rethinking as we speak. But it's definitely worth taking into consideration.
Well, as we put a capstone on this moment of conversation, I want to say I didn't intentionally want to make this an intervention. That was not, this was a reader's question or a listener's question. I think you're doing great, and clearly what you have been doing is working.
Yeah.
So a part of it is, if it ain't broke, why fix it? You know, that's also true.
But
that also leads to the counterbalance against the, if I was starting right now, how would I do it? So those two are fighting in opposition, and that's okay. They should be, because you're trying to find the best possible, like, Socratic ideal of how I should be creating this comic, right?
Yeah.
And so it's fun, because there may come a time where I'm doing drive wrong, or doing drive in a way that is like molasses. It was the right way to do it 3 years ago, but it's not the right way to do it now. And so I am prepared. Like, for example, I'll give you one example before we go out on this.
Yeah.
Increasingly, people are showing comics panel by panel, something that I have not done for Drive, because I still like doing the occasional long horizontal panel, if you know what I mean, that would stretch across three panels. And that will just look dumb in Instagram or on whatever it is. Or there are a lot of people in the Webtoons format that are doing long scrollers where they basically disembodied all the panels from the comic page and then float them down as you scroll down, right? I could do drive that way. And a part of me is keeping my eye on that as a presentational thing. Like, is old man Kellett not being prepared enough to change such that he's shooting himself in the foot? You know what I'm saying there? Am I a little bit too stuck in my ways? So I'm trying to stay open to that, because maybe in a year or two, I'll be like, well, this seems to be the way everyone's reading comics. Maybe I need to switch it up, you know, that kind of thing. So that's the counter. And that's what I meant about the opposition of, if it ain't work, don't fix it. Or if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And the other oppositional thought of, like, if I was starting right now, would I design it this way? And those are two good ideas to keep in opposition as you plan and go through your career. Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute to stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, we're going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
When you do, you're going to get hours and hours of podcasts that we recorded just for backers.
And exclusive Patreon posts that go even deeper on Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, which is a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, we get it. No worries.
Yeah, listen, you can still support the show by rating us wherever you get your podcasts.
Just leave a 5-star review and a few kind words.
That, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
Now, everybody, let's talk comics. Well, Brad, once again, we've got to thank our sponsor for this week's show, the good folks over at Wacom at WACOM.com, the makers of the new Wacom One, with both Brad and I have in our studio, being used with delight.
Absolutely.
Brad, if you had to describe how heavy the Wacom One is, how would you describe it in your hands?
Oh, gee whiz. You know,
would you describe it like I do, like a whispered kiss in terms of weight?
Like a puppy's whisker.
Like a puppy's whisker.
Like nothing that you could even say has heft. It's
like a fallen feather from a phoenix. It is so light.
It really is. It's deceptively light, to be honest with you. I know when I took it traveling with me a couple weeks ago, it was so easy to just put that into my messenger bag and off I went. My sketchbook, I think, was heavier than that Wacom One.
I like how you said deceptively light, as though you're like, I mean, I was still able to kill a man with it. It was, don't get me wrong. I don't know what deceptively light means.
It's that kind of light that George Carlin explained that for a moment you think you're Superman. It's so light, it's like, oh man, I've got super strength.
And for an artist, that's important. We need those moments of like, yeah. Hey, look at me, I'm lifting up this object.
I need those moments of competence. It's very
true.
Nice.
It's like
for
when you
me.
Go to lift up a can of like Coca-Cola and it's empty. And you're like, oh boy, look how strong I am.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's the feeling I get every time I lift up my Wacom One.
So we thank them for sponsoring this week's show. And Brad, jumping right into it, I've got a question here coming in from Takaka of from Finland, I believe it is, or Finnish at least. I don't know if they are currently in Finland. They are Finnish. But so they say, first time question asker here. Firstly, I'll have to thank you on behalf of my shoulders because after binging most of the archive, I've now managed to condition myself to stretch every time I hear the Comic Lab theme song.
That's awesome.
That's delightful. That's great. And after this, if they've gone through the whole archive like that, what do they say? 30 days? If you can do a thing for 30 days, it's now a habit.
You can make it a habit. Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so that's actually partially why we put that stretch in. For those of you that are listening to this on the public feed, we put that thing in saying, now's your time to stretch. Because, boy, stretching in the arts is the underspoken hero of keeping us all healthy.
It really is.
Taking a break, bringing your shoulders back, wiggling your head around a bit. Boy,
stretching
I'm doing it right now and I feel
muscles.
Better.
Hearing those bones snap and creak.
Exactly. But here is the question that they are sending in. To the question, what are or have been, Brad, the most common obstacles that prevent you from just starting to draw? And how have you dealt with them?
So there's a lot there. There's first the overwhelming kind of angst of I'm very anxious. yeah, I'm very anxious about this thing that's going on in the world, and I'm very anxious about that thing. Or I've got bills to pay, and I need to make sure that this gets done and that gets done. There's a lot of the life things, and there's also sometimes, so the life things I'll tackle first, and that is sometimes you just have to see, I was raised Catholic, and I've got kind of a superpower from that experience, and it's called denial.
Sure, really that'll carry you through your life, Brad. Use that power. That's amazing.
Yeah, I really encourage you to develop a little denial and to say, oh well, that's not gonna worry.
This COVID won't affect me. Everything's going great.
No,
like fingers in the ear.
I saw sure somebody from my hometown on the Facebook saying that you can't catch COVID unless you want to. Well, see, it's so simple, Dave. You can't catch it unless you want to. But partially, you do
all
have to learn.
All these big city dwellers that are having terrible self-actualization. Boy, I shouldn't have wanted to catch COVID. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Part of it is, I will say, you do have to learn to develop that part that says, okay, I know that this out here is a dumpster fire, but for the next 5 minutes, I'm okay. And I'm going to use that 5 minutes, right? And then take it to the next 5 minutes and the next 5 minutes and get something until you don't have to give yourself that pep talk anymore. I try to just say, okay, I'm going to try doing this for 15 minutes and then I'm going to go over and, worry about this other thing or do something, creative. We've talked in the past, Dave, about it's really good to remember that as a web cartoonist, you are also a business person and a social media manager, so that when you do get into those zones where it's hard for you to put pencil to paper, okay, fine, your brain's not in that gear. Go do your estimated taxes. Go do a profit loss sheet. Go do something analytical and administrative, or go do some social media posts or something like that. You know, if your brain isn't into it, give your brain a break and come back to it. What do you think of that, Dave?
No, I think you're right. We've talked about that in the past, how like switching to what I would call administrative tasks. My problem, and I think this parallels with our question asker, is that sometimes if I get into day two or day three of that, I'm like, well, okay, now I'm definitely avoiding just sitting
now
down
I'm
and drawing.
Procrastinating, yeah.
Yeah, now I just need to get to my butt to the desk. Mm-hmm. And part of that is that administrative tasks are, and this is going to sound simplistic, they're easy to check off. You know, like, I need to move this pen to that side of the desk. Check, that's done. I need to move this red ball from this table to that table. Done, check, you know, whatever the task is. If it's a simple administrative task, that's good because it can still be done in a moment of non-creativity. But the problem is if you start having 2, 3, 4, 5 days of that, then you go, you are definitely avoiding art at that point. And then it's hard to switch back and be like, no, I've got to force myself to be creative.
Yeah.
And part of that, to Brad's point, is fighting your best. And we all walk our own journey on this, but fighting your best about whatever anxiety or depression or a moment of fear is keeping you from drawing in that moment. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, Brad, to hear you, the self-talk that you have, because one of the things that I say to my kids, and so I guess I say it to myself, is nothing bad is happening in this moment.
Right.
That's a phrase that I use with my kids all the time when they're afraid of something, or like, nothing bad is happening in this moment. And so that might happen. That could be something that, you know, if they're afraid of something. And it's also true for an artist. Like if you are in a safe room, if you have been fed, if you are warm and dry, nothing bad is happening in this moment. So allow yourself the gift of drawing and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's a very simplistic look at it. But part of it is also when I really find myself hesitant to draw, part of it is recapturing the joy that drawing brings to the world. And so I kind of start to read my favorites. And flipping through, like we were talking about Burke Breathitt, flipping through Old Bloom County, flipping through Old Watterson, or even comics that I'm reading now that I'm enjoying. Like a good saga will get me really in the mood to write and draw Drive. And so I thank them for that. Reading really good multiple panel comic strips or get me in the mood to write Sheldon. And so I thank other cartoonists that give me that gift of getting me back to creativity. You ever try a technique like that, Brad?
Yeah, I kind of do another approach to that, and that's this. When I'm so here's what happens to me an awful lot, and I mean an awful lot. If I'm writing or if I'm drawing an After Dark, there are so many visual challenges to that I really dig in and I get obsessed and I immerse myself in it. And the next thing I know, it's 3 hours later and I've got something I'm really proud of. Because it's a real toothy drawing challenge, right? There's a lot to work out there, and I love that. I love solving those puzzles. I love solving those problems. Evil Ink itself, a lot of times, like I said on the top of the show, is a lot more about relationships and wordplay and punchlines and stuff like that. Sometimes it's very easy to kind of get into this talking head puppet show thing. And what happens is, when I've got a page like that set in front of me, I can't get my motor started. I procrastinate and I don't want to dive. I'll do something else right now. And I end up falling behind. It happens a lot. And what I've got to do in those moments, the only thing that snaps me out of it is to find something compelling. And by the way, this also makes the page a lot better. Because like I said in a previous show, if you think you're bored, think of what you're doing to your audience.
Right.
I got to find something in that page that's a challenge.
Yes.
That's a drawing challenge.
Yes.
I've got to switch it up. I've got to maybe change the scene. I maybe have to draw something from a unique perspective or draw it from from outside of the building.
Boy, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. I've got to find something to compel myself to a drawing challenge that I can sink my teeth into. Then all of a sudden again, then that fire catches again. And now it's okay. Well, how am I going to do that? And if I do that, how's this person going to, and then, and then going a little bit granular and saying, okay, but have I even thought about what the expressions are on their faces, what their gestures are? Am I really doing that as well as I could to sell this joke? And what happens is a lot of times knowing that's how my brain works, I can kind of trick myself into becoming just as obsessed about that page as I would about another page by going in and saying, wait a minute, what's the gesture here? What's the facial expression? What's mm-hmm. what's the overall mood of this? If I start setting myself up those challenges, then all of a sudden I'm a house of fire again.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's actually a really good thing. Those little challenges, those sparks that get you excited to do the thing are a great one. Well, Brad, I also think it's worth saying, because even though we are not professionals or at all words of authority on mental health, it's worth saying to all of us, because we should be comfortable talking about it, is that if you find yourself months and months and months or years and years and years stuck in molasses, that's a point where it's time to maybe talk to not only family, but maybe a professional.
Yeah.
And it's okay in the same way that I always look at it that, Brad, if I have something wrong with my heart, I go to a cardiologist.
Right.
And if there's something that clearly my noggin is not working for me in a way that I want it to do, it's okay to talk to a professional. And there does not need to be a stigma about that. Because a lot of our families, a lot of our cultures, a lot of our nations do not have an acceptance to just talk about things in a matter-of-fact way. And it's okay that sometimes our noggins just need a little professional help one way or another, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you find that it's stretching out for a very long time, reach out to family and friends. Of course, yes, that's a wonderful thing. But also maybe consider talking to a professional and seeing how that might be able to help you within a broader spectrum of care. Don't you think, Brad?
And overall, take it easy on yourself. I mean, it's easy to see that we're all kind of in the same boat with everything that's going on in the world. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on
I'm not familiar. Is there anything happening, Brad? Anything going on in the world that I should?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. I heard the term doom scrolling on social media the other day, and it was, this thing where you just before you go to bed, you just scroll and keep scrolling to see, okay, when's the other shoe going to drop? This bad thing has happened. Now I'm going to keep scrolling until I see the next bad thing. And part of this is it might be a good idea that if your brain is telling you, I just don't want to draw right now, again, listen to it, take a break, walk away, do something that restarts your creative energy, whether that's reading or watching a movie or going for a run in the park. Do whatever it takes to kind of recapture your creative energy. But don't force yourself, because again, this is not 2002 when you had to update that website every day, every day to keep the ad servers happy. This ain't that anymore. This is, going back to last week's show, you don't have to give them hamburgers every day. Give them steaks every other day or every 3 days or whenever your steaks are ready to serve.
Yeah. And, we talked about at the beginning of this pandemic, the people that were comparing themselves to their quarantine moments to Shakespeare going to Stratford-upon-Avon and writing whatever it was, Macbeth. I don't remember what he wrote in quarantine. Coming up with calculus or coming up with gravity during the great plagues of the 1600s.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. You don't need to compare to someone else's highlight reel, especially if those people are the two of the greatest or humans that ever lived creatively,
right,
you know?
Right.
Like, I don't... It's okay that Dave Kellett needs to take a night with a sleeve of Oreos rewatching Galaxy Quest. I don't have to be Shakespeare tonight, you know? Like, I can just give my...
Oh my God. Be kind
to myself. And sometimes you've just got to take a night off to just give yourself a moment to escape the terrible moment that we're in, you know? And
that's okay. I love that sentence. I don't have to be Shakespeare tonight. That's a great set. That's almost t-shirt worthy. I don't have to be Shakespeare tonight.
Because it's hard. We, all of us, what is the phrase, Brad? Help me out. That we compare someone else's highlight reel to
a social media post. I think almost everybody knows what you're talking. I don't know that it's condensable, but it's don't compare your documentary to somebody else's highlight reel.
Right. Or our blooper reel, which is what it feels like, to someone else's highlight reel. So I'm here sitting with my sleeve of Oreos watching Galaxy Quest,
yeah,
and it's a wah-wah moment, you know? And in the meantime, Shakespeare's over there going, oh, I've got two more versos written. How fantastic. By the way, I don't know why he sounds so foppish. I don't know why Shakespeare. Oh, what a pretty party. Oh.
Romeo, oh Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Oh, yes, yes, Mrs. Ricardo. Did we ever figure out what that actor's name was from Lucy Ball?
I've got it in my memory banks. I've looked it up so many times. It'll come to me. It starts with an F.
Meanwhile, let me ask you this. If I asked you who hosted Match Game the most, you could tell me right away, couldn't you?
Yeah, that was Gene Rayburn.
What useless information is that, Brad?
He had a special microphone. It was actually a lavalier mic on the end of a long, skinny piece of metal. They made special for him. You can't buy that microphone.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's what What's-His-Nuts did for Price is Right. He had that same lavalier look, and it actually was really sleek because you could hold it down towards your waist.
Exactly.
And still have it.
You could direct it to the second person talking without putting your arm into the scene. You could just flick your wrist.
So that was a lavalier mic. Wow, that's a bit of information that I did not know I would know by the end of the show.
Comic Lab, making
you smarter.
They probably do build one now, but at the time, you in the 70s, you couldn't, you know, 60s, it goes all the way back to, you couldn't find one. They had to make that for him special. And I think it all started with Gene Rayburn, but don't quote me on that.
My favorite was in the 40s in World War II when they were doing radio plays. And all the radios had those shock mounts that were like 3 feet around the microphone. So it was these counterbalance, counterlevered pieces of rubber. And so they're like, oh, here comes the copper now. And you look at those like bits of footage from then, and it's this giant cantilevered system of shock mounts on a microphone. Why don't even remember what the question was? Oh, okay, so I think we need to put a capstone on it. Is that allow yourself moments for administration.
Yes.
When that's not working, find inspiration in your heroes and even in your own past work. Change up the panels, the pages that you're drawing to give yourself a newfound sense of excitement. Mm. And then if it's really going for a long stretch of time, reach out to family, to friends, and to professionals. Wouldn't you say, Brad?
Yeah.
I think that's actually a pretty cohesive answer for that.
You got it, yeah.
And we were able to work in Gene Rayburn's lavalier mic, so there we go. We got everything.
It's a perfect show, yeah.
And a foppish Shakespeare. I mean, we're really doing everything.
And most of all, take it easy on yourself, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, just take it easy. We're all going through this. You're not alone. You're not the only one who's struggling with this. I'm telling you, I just had one of those weeks where I sat at the dining room table looking across at my wife by Wednesday, and I said, I just can't get my motor started. I'm so far behind. I've got a bunch of stuff that needs to get done, and I sit down and I stare at the screen, and the screen stares back at me, and I can't make stuff happen. You know?
Oh my God, you just described my yesterday, by the way. That was all day. It was like, I can't get... And then I go to bed going, well, that was a big wash. What a great day that was.
Why you go to bed and you say, why the hell did I even bother to get out of bed?
There was a moment, and it was a few weeks back, where I was like, what did I get done today? And like the highlight reel of the day was, oh, I took the trash out. Okay, great. Well, good work, Dave. Oh, great.
Yeah.
Good job.
Why the heck did I even bother? Oh, and by the way, Dave, I knew it was going to come to me. His name is Frank Nelson. Yes.
No, Mrs. Ricardo, yes.
Right, I knew it started with an F.
Well, our next question, Brad, comes in from MJ, and MJ writes, I've heard people in various creative fields say, quote, there's no retirement plan in this job. Was that a consideration when you left your day jobs? Should young creatives be thinking about IRAs? And for those outside of the United States, an IRA is basically an independent retirement account. Should young creatives be thinking about IRAs? Is anyone born after 1975 ever going to be able to retire? OMG, this is a very good question. All right, so let's tackle MJ's question, Brad.
Yeah.
This is about retirement, about finances, about when you make the leap from a day job into cartooning, how do you have to be thinking about it? Or if you're already well into your cartooning or freelance career, how should you be thinking about your retirement plan? Brad, you want to jump in on this one first?
Well, I'd be lying if I said that retirement was on my mind when I left my day job. Although, to a certain extent, it was also pragmatism, because I saw my own dad, who worked in a factory for all of his life and had a retirement plan from the company. And I saw that the company basically kind of yanked it away. And all this retirement that he was due, they'd gotten in a lump sum, but it wasn't a retirement plan.
What? Was it one of those 80s and 90s companies that declared bankruptcy and then took away the pension?
I don't know.
Oh, I hate those bastards.
I don't know all of the details. He's shared with me some of the details. I'm not going to go into them here, but it was one of those things that it was like all of his life he was going to have this, and he didn't. And but he still told me the importance of getting a job, that had a pension plan. And so I worked 20 years at newspapers, right? And unfortunately, not at the same one throughout the whole thing, but a good chunk of it was for one newspaper chain. I get letters, and by the way, did what I was supposed to do. I went and I got a job and I got that pension plan. I get letters from them every quarter telling me this pension plan's on its last legs. It's not going to be solvent. it's don't put a lot of trust. Yeah. I'm exaggerating again. Don't take me word for word on
it's
that.
It's just like a nervous guy at a street corner. We're having a lot of trouble over here with this pension plan.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think they've ever used the actual words insolvent. But let's say this, when I open that envelope, I certainly don't hear happy days are here again. No, there's none of that.
I do feel like, though, they're going overboard when they include the little moss in the envelope so that when you open it up, they fly out.
Yeah.
I feel like that's going over the top. That's not, that's unnecessary.
I actually opened up the envelope one time, stared into it, and I just heard an echoey, not again, nobody down here.
It's just a voice from inside the envelope to go, dead men tell no tales.
But I spent a lot of time working at that, and I don't have a lot of positive thinking. I don't have a lot of optimism thinking that I'm going to get a retirement check from them. And like MJ rightly points out, I don't know of too many people born after 1970, and I was born in 69. I don't know of too many people our age that have an honest to goodness shot at a retirement. So it is something that is going to be problematic. I'm not really sure I'm in the position to tell you what that solution is, because I just got off the phone with my dad who put a lot of that money into a 401k. And that 401k ain't doing so well right now either.
No,
so I don't know what the answer is, Dave. I'm floundering. In fact, the more I'm talking, the more depressed I'm getting. So maybe you should take over at this point.
Well, okay, so let me offer some positive and some not so positive advice. Let's start off with the not so positive. Okay, so we're talking about this at the beginning part of what could potentially be the biggest financial downturn since the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
We probably, if this keeps going south, will be in depression territory.
Yeah.
And so this is a little bit like saying to someone in the midst of a hurricane, boy, storm cellars sure are helpful. Wish you had built a storm cellar, right? Like,
yeah.
Like financial advice right now is, you try to give someone financial advice right now, it's like, fuck you, it's a depression. What are we going to do? Like,
right,
what
right.
You tell me what to do. So, okay, in happier days, what we all would have been should have been doing, and we talked about this in a previous show about a year ago, Brad, I advised at the time, really try to live within your means, and not just within your means, but with at a low enough point such that you can set aside a specific amount of money into automatic depositing so that you're not even looking at it. It's coming from your inflow of money, and it goes directly into either your savings account or some kind of special IRA or investment and retirement account that you are not even seeing. Like, because if you're not even touching it, if you automate it, it is it greases the wheels towards towards savings that's guaranteed, right? Because you can't touch it. You can't allow yourself like, well, maybe I need the new PlayStation 5. I'm just gonna not make that deposit this month. You know, that kind of thing.
Right. Or I'll take the money out this month, but next month I'll pay double.
Yeah. Yeah, you're basically stealing from future Brad to so that present Brad can get that new new bikini wax or whatever it is. So I don't know why I said bikini wax.
Twice in the same month?
Dave, how hairy do you think I am? One time we'll do it. So automatically depositing savings into a retirement account or even just a savings account in worst case scenario is a great way to go. And then I cannot stress enough living within your means, even for those of us that have work, thank God, that's continuing right now through this pandemic. Living within your means is not just some cute thing. It is a guarantee both that you will have a 6 to 12 month cushion, which I will also heavily recommend.
Yes.
And we're seeing that right now in real time, why that's so important to have a 6 to 12 month cushion, because so many of our friends, peers, and even some of the people listening are like, God, I'm glad I have a cushion. And when I say a 6 to 12 month cushion, what I mean is that month, you have enough savings to pay all your bills for a month, for 2 months, for 3 months, and you want to get up to 6 months, ideally, if you can, 8 to 12 months, because it also serves as your emergency fund. Oh, no, I've triple broken my legs, and so I'm out of work, and now I have these medical bills. Thank God I have this cushion. Oh, no, there's a pandemic, and I'm out of work for a year. Thank God I have this cushion. Right. You can think of all the different varieties of ways. Oh, no, my transmission and my air conditioner and my dishwasher all broke in the same month. I'm glad I have this cushion, you know, that kind of thing. And then retirement is basically a bigger version of that. You basically have to say to yourself, A, you're going to live longer than you think you're going to live. Like everyone thinks they're going to be dead at 75. You could conceivably go to 90, 95, 100. I mean, it's we're doing pretty good on human lifespans these days. You could go for longer than you think. And you also need to be planning to be working longer than you think.
Yeah.
This 1950 ideal that like, I'm 65, I'm off to Southern Florida. Bye, everyone. Like, I personally love what I do, so it's not a problem. But I'm planning on working as long as I'm physically able. Like, I like my job and I want to keep doing it. But for even people that don't like their job, you should probably mentally prepare to work far longer than the 1950s leave it to Beaver kind of thing that that you had been promised, you know. And then as far as retirement planning, I know it's simplistic, but God, I would really recommend Susie Orman. I think she's a little bit cuckoo bananas, but she's got some really solid advice for retirement planning and for financial planning. And I like her a lot. I think Susie Orman's great. And so I think she's also good in terms of real talk of like, hey, do you deserve to buy that new couch? Hey, do you deserve to take that trip to Colorado? No. Live within your means. Save it. And she's got some great strategies and some great ratios that she would recommend. And I think she's got a pretty good track record in terms of the advice that she gives. Brad, any other capstone thoughts to that?
Yeah, no, I don't. You gave a much better answer than I did. And those are all good things to look out for. There's always a way. So you may not think, oh, geez, maybe it's a little bit late for me to start now, or you're like, I really can't put a lot away. You'd be really surprised, even if you put a little away every month, that can really build, especially if you don't touch it, especially if you're consistent about it. Those little bits can really add up. So don't put yourself down or don't think, well, maybe I'll do it next week when I'm a little bit more solid ground. Find a way to put a little bit aside for yourself every month. And you can take that old proverb about paying yourself first before you pay anybody else. Get yourself in that mindset. I'm going to pay me first. Then I'm going to pay that other guy.
And then the one other thing, too, is even if you're starting young with very limited means, the magic of either compounding interest or reinvestment strategies with certain 401ks or IRAs means that if you're putting away 50, 25, 100 bucks a month as a 25-year-old, that's the equivalent of being 65, and suddenly your investment or retirement advisor says, you've got to put $200,000 into your investment or your retirement account.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, if you start with small amounts, the power of using either compounding interest or reinvestments, what I'm getting at is you can do it for very small amounts, like Brad said, if you're starting young. And frankly, you can do it right now at very small amounts, and there is benefit to just starting. So, so I hope that answers your question, MJ. But the truth is that there's not a good industry-wide solution for retirement, quote-unquote.
Right.
And that is a problem both for comics and, frankly, for a lot of America, for a lot of American careers. Because corporate America and the wider American culture doesn't give you much credence to, like, hey, let's support individuals in how they build and keep a safe life, you know, that kind of thing. It's more of, hey, how do we do this quarter for this corporation and, move, you know, anyway.
How do we do for the shareholders?
Yeah, let's get the shareholders fine. Anyway,
well,
go ahead.
As we retire this episode of Comic Lab, it's my pleasure to tell you, Mr. Transition over here, that you've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been my friend, Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And my good friend, Dave Kellett, co-director of Stripped and cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
And the Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode and all episodes was edited by the delightful Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions over at www.woodsong.media. And this week's sponsor, of course, good folks at Wacom at WACOM.com. Wacom.com, the makers of the new Wacom One.
If you love Comic Lab, you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, and you may hear your review featured on a future episode like this one. This one comes in from the Oddly Normal One, who gave us 5 stars over on Apple Podcasts. They say, Brad and Dave are the best at talking shop about comics, teaching you about comics, and making you laugh along the way. Imagine you're sitting across the table over lunch talking about all the comics you love and figuring out on your own how your art works. That's this podcast. You will not find better people to encourage you at whatever stage in your art career you are at and still make you feel like you can and want to do it more. This is a podcast I don't miss. Super nice, right? Even enjoying going back and listening to older episodes again. Thanks, fellas. That came from our friend, the Oddly Normal One.
Thank you for that. We've had a few people lately talk about they're going back and binging the whole thing.
Yeah.
And listen, I think they're delightful. That's amazing to go back and binge the whole thing again. And I hope
know.
A couple people have done it as they've started a big project. And that's delightful that we're kind of helping along quietly, not quietly, but in their ear as they're working on their project, which is really fun.
I love hearing that.
Anyway, Comic Lab is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that in my Foppa Shakespeare voice. patreon.com/comiclab. Off to write Macbeth. So, Brad, in terms of retirement, do you have a cushion?
Yeah, when it comes to that point where I can't work any further, I do have a cushion. It's about 12 inches by 12 inches, really thick foam, and I've got strict instructions just to push it down on my face. just when I stop kicking, that's it. The cushion's done. Ooh, how's that for dark humor?
Oh, my God. On the opposite side of the cushion is just taped your durable power of attorney that says, keep pushing, keep pushing.